First off, they'll say what it is, a festival.
Hey, folks, want to tell you about the first annual Best of the Northwest Vernonia Springs Music Festival. It's going to take place on July 7th, 2018. KBOO is our co-sponsor, and our headliners are Lloyd Jones and Baby Gramps.
Sometimes known as Sourdough Dolly.
Let's use your hammer punch of that good old Mountain Dew.
www.vernoniasprings.com/VSMF. To learn more, go to kboo.fm.
And people think, he's so old, he squeaks. And I will prove that.
Look for the Vernonia Springs Music Festival.
And I'd like to convert it into a bedlam of jive. Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
You are listening to Art Focus on KBOO 90.7 FM Community Radio. My name is Amanda Clem, and I'll be your host today. Our guest in the studio is Tyler Mackey, and we'll be talking about her exhibition, Intimate Spaces, which is currently up at the Chehalem Cultural Center in Newburgh, and will be on view through July 28th. Tyler got her BFA in Studio Arts from Oregon State University and her MFA in Studio Arts from Louisiana State University. Her work explores relationships between performance, visual, and craft-based communities with an emphasis on the female experience. Some of her recent projects include a solo exhibition at Wolf Gallery last year, as well as a public art installation, Bridge for Blankets, which was installed on the Broadway Bridge in 2013. I definitely want to talk about that in a minute. Welcome, Tyler. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Amanda.
So, Intimate Spaces is a retrospective, is what we're calling it. It's a culmination of several bodies of work that are very related to each other.
Yes.
And it involves two-dimensional work, but also sculptural pieces that manifest, as the statement says, in the divine, wounded, and everyday contradictions of a lived female experience. It was a great show at the Chehalem Cultural Center in Newburgh. It was my first time visiting that space. It was really lovely and laid out in a really engaging way, I thought. So first I want to talk about the sculptures that are hanging just right when you walk in. We Climb the Lantern, which is a knit piece that looks like it's hanging from the ceiling, and they're, what do you call those, crocheted squares? They have a specific
those are called, yeah, so it's all crocheted. And then there's like a braided rope that it hangs from, and then the rope continues down past it, kind of like an umbilical cord connecting to the ground.
Yes.
I originally started making these granny squares as a sample for the Bridge for Blankets project that ended up being realized. So there were lots of yarn bombings. There were a couple of different groups in Portland specifically that were doing yarn bombing. And I biked across the Broadway Bridge a lot and saw a yarn bomb on a handrail on the eastward, like bike and pedestrian deck of the Broadway Bridge. And it sparked something in me, and I'd been thinking a lot about flow and movement of energy as a way to center your own body and your connection to the earth and also to everything that exists beyond. So essentially I was thinking about the flow of the chakra. And I ended up going more direct with the colors so that it was more obvious that it was a flow of the chakra in the final design. And so then I never really like to waste any material from projects. And I had been making smaller granny squares and then just started folding them. And this shape evolved from it. So it's kind of like a three-dimensional diamond. Sort yes. of like pinched and stitched together. And I noticed that the granny squares for me and just these kind of handicraft techniques and materials really make me think of the the handicraft work that my mom and my grandma Marlene specifically did a lot of as I was growing up. And so the sculptural piece ended up becoming a lantern. At that time, my studio space was also in my bedroom/studio apartment.
Combo.
So I was doing a lot of hanging pieces because that's what I had the space for. And so then it made me think of why it's called lantern is I remembered this stained glass lantern that my parents still have hanging over the dining table in their current house. And we used to get up on the dining table and swing the lantern around. And so it's an allusion to that moment of a child not really understanding the preciousness of an object.
Mm-hmm.
And the enthusiasm of kind of reaching for something more, which I think goes back to the idea of trying to find a group or funding to help me realize the bridge project. So it kind of stretches into the past and hopeful into the future.
I love that. So. I love how work connects like that. I like the breadth of the practice, how it starts, and all of the different ways you can take that same theme or idea and mm-hmm. all of the things that are sparked after that. So the Bridge for Blankets, let's do talk a little bit about that. Okay. Because that's around the time that we met when we were working at the Museum of Contemporary Craft.
Yes.
Everyone remembers that.
Yes.
And it was a great idea, and I was excited to contribute a few squares to the project.
That's
and,
right.
And it was a great bonding experience. My grandma helped me with that, so
right.
It's like a really great memory that I have from her.
Yeah.
And the visual impact of seeing the blankets on the bridge installed when they were up was striking.
Yeah.
And it added such a softness to such a hard, industrial
mm-hmm.
object
mm-hmm.
that I was wondering what kind of feedback were you getting from that, and like how did that change your practice at all, seeing your work on a scale like that? Like the hanging from a bridge is huge.
Yeah.
And all the time and that went into organizing it, finding volunteers to knit and et cetera. So
mm-hmm.
it was a huge endeavor.
It was. It was a massive endeavor. So I worked with the PDX Bridge Festival.
Yes.
And so I served on the board in just like kind of a nominal, I would say, capacity, where it was really just about keeping them informed throughout the year as we led up to the 2013 centennial for the Broadway Bridge. So the Broadway Bridge was the third bridge I learned from working on this project to be celebrating its centennial here in Portland, and it's a bascule bridge.
What does that mean?
It has like these counterweights underneath of it that extend out from where the bridge opens up and then closes back down. So it
tilts.
How would you describe? Yeah,
it
so
tilts
it tilts. It tilts
straight up.
Yeah, it tilts up instead of lifting straight up like the
Hawthorne
steel bridge or the Hawthorne
mm-hmm.
Bridge does. And historically, the Broadway Bridge was also a really important bridge to open up because it opened up connections in industrial community between Northwest and Northeast. So there was a lot of historical cultural importance to the bridge when it opened. And it's red, and I love red. It still is the bridge that I cross every day to go to and from work. And it has a beautiful view of like, the Fremont Bridge and then the steel to the south. And how it changed my practice. It took all of my energy
mm-hmm.
for almost an entire year, and I did a lot of crowdfunding to fund the project. So my parents actually fronted the money for the yarn. I think if I were going to fund this kind of this scale of a project again, I would probably push for having a longer timeline and maybe forgo being able to meet the deadline of having it on the date of the centennial.
Yes, that was a pinch deadline.
Yeah, because self-care for owing money on the project definitely took like an energetic toll on me. But the project itself on the bridge, yes, wow, amazing. Yeah. It was huge. And it was too large. I couldn't really appreciate it in the moment enough. But it was amazing. There were so many volunteers, over 200 volunteers.
Oh, wow.
On the project, from the knitting of the squares. They were each 12 by 12 inch squares, and you could knit them however you wanted to. But we had a limited amount of yarn, so you couldn't get too complex with the patterning. And yeah, all the way from creating the squares, putting them together, making them into the big banners that hung, sewing the fastening along the sides so that they didn't tear apart in the wind.
The reinforcements.
Yeah. That took a long time, so I had volunteers that stayed with me late through the night to work on that. And then taking everything apart, taking them apart into blanket sizes. So we'd already planned that out, that we were going to break them down into 6-foot square blankets. The math worked out, because they were 18 by 21 foot banners. There were four of them. It worked out that there were 12 blankets donated to homeless shelters, a women's shelter, and to Emmanuel Hospital. Those blankets for Emmanuel Hospital were for the children's hospital, and so those were 3x6, if anyone's thinking about the math of how it broke down. Since they were for children, we were able to break them down a little bit smaller, and the colors ended up matching just perfectly for those donations, because they actually matched the colors of Emmanuel Hospital, which is red and purple. So that was completely an unaware, like a happy mistake.
Yeah, it's a coincidence.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it brought me back inward, honestly, after I made the work. It was such a massive, like, kind of projection piece to make, and it took so much effort of all of the volunteers. My mom, Sharon Mackey, was definitely the largest volunteer coordinator that I had. There was another woman, Melissa, but she also coordinated on the southwest side of town in Beaverton area and brought a lot of folks together.
So the scale of the blankets was huge. Did it change the scale of your intimate work? Because I noticed when I was going through the exhibition, they are fairly large pieces, and so then the smaller 2D pieces, or I should say the 2D pieces tend to be smaller than the more sculptural pieces.
Yes.
And so have you always worked on that scale, or is that something that has kind of grown from your experience?
The largest piece that I'd made before the Broadway Bridge piece was for my thesis, and it was an 8x9, basically beehive-shaped, like, tent dress that you could walk into, and it had sound and light, and you could lay down in it. And so it was essentially a crafted womb room. And so that was the largest scale that I'd worked on previous to that. I've always found it really satisfying to work very large, and then also to work really small. I think the variety in scale just sort of depends on what the project is and what the project demands that I honor in what it requests of me. So it varies, and I think that somewhat relates to my history studying dance and in theater and thinking about scale and thinking about that as being something that can, when it varies, it can add more drama, I think, for the viewer.
Yes, the viewer's experience is definitely a much more intimate experience with your work, in that you are inviting people to interact with one of the pieces.
Yes.
I actually want to get back to that. But first I want to talk a little bit about the bellies. So they're large pieces, and they are made out of domestic objects like tablecloths and table runners. And they have a very comfortable look from far away. And then you get a little bit closer and you realize they're very rigid. You can just tell by looking at them. They're very stiff. So it's got this duality that is a little bit disconcerting, because it's an object that you want to be soft like a pillow, and then you realize it is quite firm and quite, you know, rigid in what it is.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk about that. And then they're called the bellies. So.
Yeah. I think a lot of the projects that I really end up loving and thinking about a lot, or making various iterations of. For these, there's three bellies. There's a maiden and a mother and a crone. So I've been thinking a lot about the triple moon goddess, about embodying the divine feminine, the divine woman, the divine femme. Anyone can access an understanding and experience of the divine feminine. Men, women, transgender individuals, genderqueer. I think we can all take a moment to honor the goddess and the flow of kind of how those passages of the moon can teach us something about our cycles of life through a month, or the flow of our entire life, and what is the purpose of this moment in my life? Am I still in a new moon phase? Am I wild and testing everything out, or am I more of a mother, even though I don't have children and don't plan to have children? I think of my work as being what I am mothering and taking care of and tending to. And being really excited about the idea of embodying the crone, and also honoring anyone who is in the crone's phase of their life, because there's some really radical stuff that can happen at that moment. And I think going back to the idea of there being a lot of conservative politicians in America that embody some things that are really ugly, in their fear and hatred of women. There's a large erasure of the crone. They're not very visible.
They're not valued in our society.
Yeah, there's a lot of knowledge and wisdom to be found there, and there's a lot of bravery. I also just want to honor how that bravery can be embodied by not caring, because if no one sees what you're doing, then who cares? I'm going to be as radical and amazing and powerful as I want, and I'm going to take up all my space.
And that's a great lesson for people of all ages. Along with body and movement and the objectness of your work, do you incorporate ritual in your practice?
Mm-hmm.
And how does that look for you? And is it a schedule thing? Is it consciousness, thoughtfulness?
Yeah. So I started getting into a study of witchcraft by way of chakras and studying crystals, and these things were just talking to me, and I needed them for myself, just for myself. And then they started getting incorporated into my process, and then I just started realizing that I was already doing that in my work, and that I was really just creating more intention behind the kind of space that I, like the mental psychic space that I wanted to create in my studio while I was creating. So most of it's really just about being more intentional and thinking about ways that I can honor the energies of nature and honor the earth and honor every individual that also has that love and respect for that space. So it might be like calling in all the directions and the elements and lighting all the candles in my studio just to get to that space where nobody can enter, you know. It's my space.
It's your space, all of your creative energy harnessed into one space. And there's a quote that I just wanted to read, which is that you say, "I make space where it is necessary for the unsettling to be interwoven with the decorative and pretty."
Mm-hmm.
And this, your pieces do really speak to that, and that they're beautiful. They're beautiful. The colors are very soft and feminine. A lot, they're associated a lot with the feminine, the pinks and the reds and the lacy frills. And there's one piece in particular called Experiment,
uh-huh.
and it's the red teddy with a U-shaped neck pillow hanging through the backside, and then there's hand-knit stockings attached to them. And that piece is the most literal embodiment of the human body in your exhibition.
Yeah.
And it's a lot different. So can you tell me a little bit about that? It's the term that comes to mind is suggestive. And I want to talk about that too in terms of, you know, our culture of toxic masculinity and the term suggestive, which for me, when I use it, is like suggestive or alluding to the human forms, like really, really specifically. But then when we use it in a broader cultural term, it can be applied to actual humans and the way they dress.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a red teddy nightie that's lacy,
mm-hmm.
and it's hanging from a crowbar. What is that?
That's it's just a utility.
Like a bike rack?
Yeah, just rack for whatever. I think you could hang cords on it. I've really been enjoying in the past couple of years just buying things from the hardware department at Fred Meyer. I've always loved, ever since I learned as like an undergraduate art student, that your art materials didn't have to be all these traditional materials. I've always loved figuring out ways to find my supplies.
Yes.
So
a walk down the organizational aisle at Freddy's is a good inspirational trip for anybody, probably.
So I think that piece, it actually had originally when I first installed it at Furthermore over at the Bison Building. Furthermore is a First Friday exhibition put on by alumni curatorial fellows for the Applied Craft and Design program that's run by OCAC and PNCA. And so I've showed there a couple times, and it actually had like a jacket over the utility anchor.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find it.
Well.
And I was like, I think this is a good thing. This is an opportunity for me to pare this piece down a little bit and to let the teddy really be very punctuated, and to let the form really speak a little bit more. I think there are some things about this piece that I don't feel comfortable talking about.
Yeah, that's okay.
But the only thing that I will mention is that I was really into burlesque for a while, and I can't really do it anymore because it takes too much of a focus away from the satisfaction that I find in making work in my studio. And the energy that I needed to perform as a burlesque artist is really very interwoven with the energy that I use in my studio practice. And I think like the bridge project, you know, that was very external. And I think that burlesque became very external. So it was me trying to get into a more external place and realizing that it took too much from me. So it was really like a lesson about needing my art practice as a way to help me recharge in a focused and intentional way.
I see. It brings me to questions of access and consent.
Yeah.
And the burlesque aesthetic kind mm-hmm. of, it's recognizable in some of your pieces too, mm-hmm. I think, in the frilliness
yeah.
and softness and kind of roughness to it in a certain way, like well-worn, mm-hmm. well-loved.
Yeah.
That's what they seem to me. They're mm-hmm. very soft in their weatheredness. And art, you're not typically supposed to interact with art or touch art at all in the gallery. Everyone mm-hmm. knows this by now. Except on the rare occasion, a special occasion when the artist asks you to participate. And one of your biggest pieces is a giant heart called Embrace Me, So Big You Can't Get Around It, version 2.
Mm-hmm.
And was version 1 this big?
Yes, version 1 was exactly the same size. I had in early 2011, I had moved back home to Portland from living in Madison, Wisconsin for a year and a half after I'd lived in Louisiana for 3 years. So weird climate changes. And I had made the version 1 in 2010, 2009, 2010, in that span of time. And I'd applied to a couple juried shows, and I got into both of them, and they were both at the same time. So it was really wonderful, awful month or so of having a lot of these extra materials that I'd been kind of building up, mm-hmm. and I was able to create another heart pillow. So that one went to the version 2 went to Lexington, Kentucky, and the version 1 went to Brooklyn when the Textile Arts Center had an exhibition space. They no longer do. Mm-hmm. So I was happy to be in an exhibition there that was curated by Joetta Maui. And then the other exhibition in Lexington was curated by Becky Alley.
Great.
Yeah.
So Embrace Me, version 2, is a giant heart that is made up of hand-dyed dress slips, cotton and acrylic yarn, silk thread, found textiles, bed sheets, polyfill.
Lots of things.
Crystals, beading, lots of it. It's a very intricate collage of materials. Mm-hmm. And the knitting portion of them specifically are conical.
Yes.
They are suggestive of, yes. one might say, a certain part of a female anatomy,
mm-hmm.
the nipple.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows it and loves it.
Yeah.
And there are many on this pillow, and they're all soft. They also remind me a little bit of cupcake tops.
Oh,
I don't know. That was a weird association I had.
Confectionery.
Confectionery.
Yes,
very
absolutely.
Sweet. And it does draw you in. And so it's really nice to see a sign next to it that says you are invited to gently embrace the heart pillow.
Yeah.
And when you do, it was transportative for me in a way that it reminded me a lot of my grandmother.
Good.
And being a young person.
Good.
And enveloped by that,
yes.
softness and mm-hmm. that warmth. And mm-hmm. to get that so physically from a sculpture is mm-hmm. a very cool experience. So I'd highly recommend everyone take a visit to the Chehalem Art Center.
Mm-hmm.
And visit this piece specifically.
Yeah, that heart pillow piece has always gotten a lot of really wonderful feedback, and I have a lot of feelings about it. It was created as a way for me to start investigating more deeply into what love is and how can I confront an idea of what I think love is in a way where I get to hug something. Because I'd actually broken up with painting in 2008. I stopped painting because I couldn't hug the piece. I literally hugged one of my paintings, and I was like, this doesn't feel right. I need to make pillows,
it's
and nothing
not
else.
Back.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a slow burn. And then the belly paintings is really, I think, my passage back into actually figuring out a couple of years ago a way to reconcile my relationship with painting, because I never hated painting. Mm-hmm. I just didn't need it at all.
Yeah, it wasn't fitting into your practice at that moment.
Yeah.
And did the ritual, when you introduced more ritual into your life, did that, was that around the same time that you started painting again? Because I ask because the paintings are also very, there's a lot of physical movement in them. They're very drippy. Yeah. The drips all go in different directions.
Uh-huh.
And it's very methodical in some ways. It seems like a map. And it reminded me a little bit of a map, the interior process. Yeah. And it seems like to create something like that, you definitely have to have, I guess I'm asking, did you have a goal in mind with them, or did they kind of find themselves in your practice when you were working with such intention?
The belly pieces came to me in a dream, and I started making small versions of them so I could start figuring things out, and I was very tentative and making drawings, but I had this idea, this voice, this desire that was really deep within me that knew that I needed to make these pieces and that I was going to get something very deep and very satisfying from making them. And as soon as I made the first, so the bellies are made on cradled wooden panels, and I make the pillow form on the panel, and then I stitch the tablecloth on top of it. And as soon as I had just pinned the tablecloth on top of the first belly piece, which is actually the mother, I started with the mother piece, it was just like wah, 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 wah. I just knew that I was doing something.